Chapter 4. He was so deep in thought that he didn't notice the priest until he spoke.
You look troubled, my son.
Troubled? Hardly. It was all Alistair Ashcroft could do to stifle a laugh.
No, Father. My heart is full of joy.
Then I'm happy for you. I'm afraid very few of my congregation could say the same.
Ashcroft shrugged.
And maybe they are not following the right path.
And do you believe that you are?
Oh, yes. I know what path I have to tread.
He wished the man would go away. He was here for peace and solitude, not for a bloody sermon. What was that quotation? Who will rid me of this turbulent priest? Maybe a modern-day William de Tracy would arrive and slay this troublesome cleric. Sadly, he failed to materialize.
I was just on my way to the confessional. Maybe you...
The priest looked at him expectantly.
No, thank you, Father.
I confessed my sins this morning in St. Barnabas in Greenborough. The priest stepped back.
Then I'll leave you to your reveries. God bless you, my son.
He bowed his head as if in prayer, waiting for the man to take the hint and leave him alone. After a while, he heard his footsteps fade away and the sound of a door closing. He wondered what the holy man would have thought if he'd made his confession and told him what was really on his mind. A small chuckle escaped his lips. He needed these safe places, quiet refuges from the chaos of the world. It might be a church, or sometimes he visited the lonelier spots out on the marsh at night. He sought them out at times when he needed to calm the inner voices, when they threatened to overwhelm him. There were times when they screamed at him like banshees, demanding to be heard, urging him to act, goading him on to right past wrongs. He breathed in slowly, slowly exhaled. To right wrongs. To seek justice for the ones who had no voice of their own. Those who had gone before, and one in particular. He stared up into the high-vaulted ceiling, breathed again. He had indeed found justice, brought restitution for the dead. He had accused, tried, and executed. But he found it hadn't been enough. The path continued to unfold before him. What had he said to that priest? I know what path I have to tread. No longer was he driven by a desire for vengeance, a need to bring about justice. His crusade was over. But it had left him with the certain knowledge that he was like no other killer on earth. No one else could have achieved what he had done. Now he could relax and indulge himself. It was time to play. Had he played games as a child? He couldn't remember. Well, now he was about to embark on the game of his life. The board was set out, the opponents chosen. Did they have any idea what was at stake? Alistair Ashcroft stood up. Let the fun begin.
Sarge? Gary stood beside Marie's desk and looked down at her. I've been thinking.
Careful, Gary, Marie winked at him.
Seriously, I was wondering if you'd like your old lodger back for a while.
Marie sat back in her chair.
Have your curtain-twitching neighbours finally got too much for you?
He shook his head.
The neighbours are no problem, but with a certain psycho on the loose, your being alone is a problem.
A while back, Gary had stayed in Marie's guest room in order to avoid a long commute while he looked for a new place in Salton-le-Fen. They had both enjoyed the experience, largely because of Gary's love of cooking and Marie's enjoyment of the results.
That's very thoughtful of you, Gary, but I'm fine, really, and you love your home in the village. We aren't far away from each other, and if anything happens, I'll ring you like a shot, believe me.
After all, their patient man could leave it months before he contacted them again.
Well, the offer's there, and I suggest that if we have the slightest suspicion that he's about to make a move, you think seriously about it.
Gary gave her a look of such concern that Marie felt a rush of affection for him.
I will, my friend. Don't you worry about that.
He hesitated for a moment before returning to his desk.
To be honest, Sarge, I'm with the boss on this. I think Ashcroft's finally ready to roll. Marie sighed. Deep down, she agreed, but was reluctant to admit it. Ashcroft had hurt her, physically and mentally, and even though she was recovered, she wasn't exactly enthusiastic about a repeat performance.
Me too, she said softly,
but I'm not going to curl up in my shell or quake in my boots. As the boss said, if he shows himself, we'll get him. We must. If he starts again, no one will be safe.
Too right. Gary straightened up.
Now, can I help you with your gun theft? I've tied up what I was doing, and I'm free to lend a hand if you like.
Perfect.
She handed him a sheaf of papers. Would you check out our Mr. Harcourt's gun licenses for me? Make sure his collection is all kosher and accounted for.
Consider it done.
Watching him return to his workstation, Marie was struck by a sudden emotion. This team meant so much to her. She would be devastated if something happened to any one of them. And while Ashcroft remained at large, their safety was constantly under threat. Somehow, Marie felt that it was her responsibility to stop him. This was personal, of course. She wanted payback for what Ashcroft had done to her and her fellow team members. Part of her almost wanted him to make a move. She needed this whole Ashcroft thing to be over, to breathe freely, wake up in the morning knowing that he was not coming back, ever. Suddenly she knew that it was going to be down to her to finish it. Even if she had to use herself as bait to draw him out, she'd do it. Jackman was right. This time, they'd take him down.
Marie?
Jackman came over to her desk and sat down next to her.
I've just been talking to a friend of mine at HQ. He's heading up a new unit that specializes in tracking and tracing the illegal movement of firearms and other weapons across the country. I've given him the details of Harcourt's missing guns, and he's going to let us know if he gets a whisper about them.
Good. And Gary's checking out Harcourt's licenses for me, so...
At that moment, a PC hurried into the CID room.
Dear Jackman, sir, Sergeant said to tell you there's been a shooting.
Where?
Barked Jackman, leaping to his feet.
In the theatre car park down Ferry Lane, sir. Will you attend?
On our way.
Marie was already heading for the door.
I'll grab a car. See you downstairs.
Jackman called across to Robbie.
Go and tell the super that we're attending a shooting in Ferry Street, in the car park at the Salton Playhouse. I'll keep her updated from the scene.
Jackman knew the Playhouse well. In the past, he and his sister-in-law, Sarah, used to take his nephews to the pantomime there. It had been an après-Christmas ritual, one the kids were not alone in enjoying. He conjured up a picture of the car park in his head. Secluded. It was tucked around the back of the old Jacobean-style building with the walls of the theatre on two of its sides. Few people used it during the week, as it was somewhat out of the way and only catered for around 50 cars. He saw Marie waving to him from one of the pool vehicles and he hurried over and jumped in. It would take only a few minutes to get there, and Marie had already activated the blue lights.
"Do you think we found the reason for Harcourt's guns being stolen, sir?"
she asked, pulling fast into the main road.
"Bit of a coincidence if it's unrelated," he murmured. "I wonder just how serious it is."
"Grapevine says it's a fatality, sir. Unconfirmed, of course."
Jackman's heart sank. Knife crime was bad enough, but the thought of people using guns on the streets of Salton Le Fen sickened him. As they arrived at the entrance to the lane that led down to the theatre, they saw a whole collection of emergency vehicles.
Park it here and we'll go on foot.
Jackman released his seatbelt. The whole area was cordoned off, every inch of it flashing with blue lights. Jackman saw a black van and a team of armed officers pouring out of it.
I see they've scrambled the ARV.
They hurried over to where uniform were manning the cordon.
What have we got, Kevin?
Jackman asked. PC Kevin Stoner lifted the blue and white tape for them to enter.
I see one male, sir, probably early 20s, shot as he went to access his car. Key still in his hand,
single shot to the head from long range. We are waiting for the medics to confirm life extinct, but from the look of the wound, he died instantly.
Any idea on him?
We haven't touched him, sir. We sealed the area immediately and have prohibited access until the photographer gets here.
He looked across to where the paramedics were about to leave the body. We do know that the vehicle is registered to a Christopher Keys of Baltimore Gardens, but I guess we don't know for sure that it's his car, do we?
Jackman nodded. The scene had to be protected from contamination, but as senior officer he needed to know who this young man was. He'd probably get a bollocking from the scene of crime guys, but he'd risk that. He took a protective suit from the pile close to where Kevin was standing and slipped on the necessary shoe covers and gloves.
You wait here, Marie.
The fewer of us trampling the scene, the better. Not that I think there will be much in the way of incriminating evidence if he was shot from a distance.
Problem?
She hadn't responded.
Christopher Keys, sir. He was one of the suspects in the hit-and-run where Kirsty Harcourt was killed, wasn't he?
Jackman let out a small groan.
I think you're right, Marie. Oh, hell.
And what if it's Harcourt's gun that killed him?
Marie said.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. I'll check the body first.
Jackman's head was racing. He didn't like the way this was shaping up at all.
The paramedic gave a resigned shrug.
Already dead when we arrive, sir. We've verified life extinct. The shot entered his brain through his temple, exited through the back of his head.
Jackman approached the body. He had never seen Keys, so identifying him would be down to finding a driving license or credit card on his person. He stood for a moment staring down at the still form. The lad was pale and fair-haired and was wearing jeans, a t-shirt with a slogan on it, and a sleeveless hoodie. He could see the key fob clutched in his hand. There was very little blood from the entrance wound, just a neat hole in his right temple that had oozed a tiny scarlet rivulet that ran in a thin stream towards the young man's ear. Jackman couldn't see the exit wound because he was lying on his back, but he could see that the blood had pooled beneath his head. He could have been asleep. He didn't even look surprised. This young man hadn't seen death coming for him. Jackman knelt, said a few words that seemed appropriate, and felt in the pockets of the hoodie. He found what he was looking for almost at once. He opened the wallet and took out a driving license. Christopher Keys. Jackman let out a soft groan. This was going to be difficult and would have to be handled with extreme care. It could cause the Harcourt family a great deal of pain, unless, of course, Harcourt was behind it. He stood up. Time to call Superintendent Ruth Crook. And he wasn't looking forward to it.
While Jackman made the call to Ruth Crook, Marie walked slowly around the perimeter of the crime scene accompanied by Kevin Stoner.
"Was it you that found him, Kev?" she asked.
"Someone reported hearing a gunshot, and when I got here I saw the poor guy lying beside his car."
Marie looked across to where the body of Christopher Keys still lay on the concrete.
"Was he in exactly the same position as he is now?"
"Pretty much, yes. The medics didn't disturb him much."
He looked at Marie.
"Why, Sarge?" "I was trying to work out the trajectory of the bullet, but I guess we need forensics to calculate that. They'll be accurate, I'd be only guessing."
Kevin looked at the body and then the surrounding buildings.
"I would guess from there." He pointed to an old warehouse to the left of the theatre.
It was a crumbling red brick affair with a series of tiny windows in rows.
"It's empty.
Apparently there's been a bit of a bun fight going on between landowners and developers. They wanted to convert it into swanky flats, but there are problems."
Kevin was probably right. If the building was empty, that made it all the more likely. It corresponded to the location of the wound, unless the guy had spun around with the impact.
"How about the CCTV coverage?" she asked.
"We've already put in a request for it," Kevin said.
"There were two private security cameras operated from the theatre. They had a bit of bother a while back with drug dealers in the car park, so they upgraded the system. Hopefully we should get some good footage."
He looked around the car park.
"This is the work of a sniper, isn't it, Sarge? A single kill shot."
And Christopher Keyes was the suspected hit-and-run driver in the Kirsty Harcourt inquiry.
Kevin gave a low whistle.
And her father owns a gun club. Jeez, this is looking nasty.
You can say that again. We have to keep an open mind, I suppose, but even so, I'm not looking forward to talking to Kenneth Harcourt.
Rather you than me, Kevin said fervently.
Ah, but it'll be you soon enough, eh? Marie smiled at him. I believe congratulations are in order. You've passed your entry examinations to join CID.
Besides being good-looking and with a ready smile, Kevin Stoner was also compassionate. Marie had worked with him on several occasions and had been impressed by his aptitude. For years now, Jackman had been pressing him to try for CID, but Kevin had insisted that he wanted to get more experience on the streets first. Now it seemed he was finally ready.
Yes, Sarge. I'm starting as a pool detective next week. I hope I'm up to it. It will seem really weird ditching the uniform.
He looked almost apologetic.
You'll get used to it, Kev. Just remember that warrant card in your pocket. You're still a policeman, uniform or not.
It'd be like starting all over again, doing all the crap jobs to begin with, just like a rookie PC.
You'll love it, Kevin. You've got what it takes. Both Jackman and I are sure of that.
Marie was amused to see Kevin Stoner blush.
Thanks, Sarge. That means a lot. I'll do my very best, I promise.
He looked up.
But there's your boss calling you.
He pointed in Jackman's direction. Marie hurried off, calling back.
Will you let me know directly about the CCTV?
Will do, Sarge.
Ruth Crook is not a happy bunny. Jackman looked harassed. Marie raised an eyebrow.
Did you expect her to be?
No, but she's particularly vitriolic this time.
Considering you're her favourite officer, that's worrying. Marie pulled a face.
She kept hammering home the warning to tread very, very carefully with Harcourt. He may have been polite to us, but he's no lover of the police. He lost his only daughter, and we couldn't find anyone to put in the dock for it.
Understandable.
So, what's the plan now? How do we proceed? Marie asked.
Jackman was watching a group of officers in protective suits erecting a tent over the victim and his car.
Forensics first. We need to know what make of gun was used here. If it was an Anschutz supermatch bolt-action rifle, then the shit will hit the fan with considerable force and soon.
I'll remember to duck.
Could a target rifle kill, sir? I don't know a thing about firearms, as you've probably guessed by now.
Jackman smiled.
If you were hitting something vital, even a BB rifle could kill. All guns, even air pistols, have lethal potential.
I always knew I hated them, Marie growled.
Me too.
Jackman absent-mindedly massaged the scar where he'd been shot.
Yep, me too.
With very good reason. Marie touched his arm gently. Let's change the subject. Scene of crime, officers are here.
She raised a hand and waved.
I can see Ella Jarvis unloading her camera and equipment.
And our favourite pathologist has turned out as well. Professor Rory Wilkinson's Citroen has just arrived.
I'm amazed that old thing is still roadworthy, Marie exclaimed.
Are you talking about Rory or Dolly the Lime Green Mean Machine?
Jackman was lightening up a bit.
Good.
Marie grinned at him.
Don't let Rory hear you talking like that. You'll get an even bigger complex about losing his boyish good looks.
He's got Spike with him too, Jackman commented.
He doesn't often let that young man out in public.
It was true. Rory usually worked alone, leaving Spike, his number one technician, in charge of the mortuary.
Hello, cherubs!
The Home Office pathologist greeted them with an angelic smile.
This makes a refreshing change. Mind you, having just returned from a grueling fortnight with D.I. Nicky Galina in Greenborough, I'm starting to wonder if you lot aren't in some kind of local derby. You know, who can notch up the most deaths?
He peered at them over his wire-rimmed glasses.
If you are, then I'm sorry to say that my money is on Nicky this month.
Jackman smiled at their friend.
She's welcome, and long may we be the losers.
He glanced at Spike.
What did you do to get a taste of freedom? Is it your birthday?
Rory smiled benignly.
Dear boy was looking so pasty. He doesn't get out much, you know. I thought a bit of a treat was called for.
Very funny. Now tell them the truth, Puff. Spike stared at him pointedly.
If I must. Actually, dear Spike is moving ahead, forensically speaking. He's making a study of ballistic trauma and gunshot wound trajectory analysis, using forensic animation to establish the relative positions of both shooter and victim.
He took a deep breath.
Did I get that right, Spike?
To perfection, Prof.
Now, can we go and look at the crime scene?
It's all yours, dear boy. I'm but a humble spectator today.
Rory watched his protege march confidently up to the cordon and pull on his zoot suit.
He's turned into a damn good technician, and it's time he moved on. I'll miss him, but that's life, isn't it? Nothing stays the same forever.
He gave a little sigh, then added,
But tell him that, and you could finish up on my dissecting table.
Marie grinned.
As if we'd dare.
Rory turned to the matter at hand.
Anything special you need from us regarding this unfortunate victim?
First and foremost, the type of gun used.
Jackman went on to mention the recent gun thefts.
Ah, you are looking for a connection.
It's vital, Rory, Jackman said softly. We need either to rule out one particular gun or start making very difficult and delicate inquiries.
Well, at least your request is a simple one this time. I'll put you out of your misery just as soon as we remove the bullet, assuming, of course, that it's still in situ. He gave a little laugh. Bullets do the strangest things sometimes. Do you know they can even ricochet off the skull and leave the body entirely?
There was an exit wound, Rory. I saw the blood pooling beneath him, said Jackman. So we'll need to find the bullet.
Fear not, dear heart. Spike is on the case, and he's as happy as a pig in chiffon. I'm sure we'll get the answers you need very quickly.
Will you ring me as soon as you have any news?
Jackman glanced at his watch.
We'd better get back.
Of course. Now I have Billy the Kid working the case with me. We should be in touch by later this afternoon. Now run along, you two. Your young victim is safe with me.
They walked back up the lane.
I hate this bit, said Marie. The waiting for forensic reports.
You should be used to it by now, said Jackman.
He climbed in and did up his safety belt.
At least this took place off the beaten track and was a single death, not some drug-crazed kid with a scrambled brain prowling down the high street with an automatic weapon.
Thank God for our gun laws, Marie added, getting into the car.
Sure, there have been massacres like Dunblane and Hungerford, but thankfully otherwise they're rare in the UK.
She started the car.
The press didn't take long to turn up, did they?
I don't want some smart young hack making the connection between Keyes and Harcourt before we're ready with some answers.
Jackman drew his brow together in a worried frown.
We have to keep a lid on the victim's identity, at least until we know about the type of gun used.
Marie pulled out into the main road.
We'll cope, sir. And hopefully, with Billy the Kid on the case, we won't have to wait too long.